From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
I'm currently captivated by thoughts of gorgeous grains and grain-like annuals, adding drama to my upcoming garden, and at the same time potentially feeding me and my beloved bird friends. Sarah Klieger of Adaptive Seeds in Oregon has a passion for these dual-purpose edible ornamentals like sorghum and millet and amaranth and more, and she's my guest today. But first, this message.
Underwriting support from Timber Press, your go-to resource for books in gardening and nature. Whether you're a new gardener, a professional at the top of your field, or a reader interested in the wonders of the natural world, their books are there to help you grow. TimberPress.com.
Sarah Klieger with Andrew Still founded Adaptive Seeds in 2009 as a farm-based organic seed company where they grow and harvest more than 80% of the seed they sell, including a gorgeous assortment of grains and grain-like annuals that are a subject of conversation today. Welcome back, Sarah. So nice to hear your voice again.
Hi, Margaret. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So listeners who missed our previous conversations on growing dry beans, one of my favorite foods of all, and growing peppers and kale, I'll link to all those in the transcript of this show on awaytogarden.com. But those have been really popular, and thank you for teaching me so much already. And I'm looking for more teaching now today. Thank you on grains. Some of the listeners who didn't hear those or heard those a while back may not remember the story of Adaptive Seeds and what you and Andrew set out to do there. Can we have sort of the brief elevator pitch of Adaptive?
Sure. Well, we are a certified organic farm-based seed company. We're based near Sweet Home, Oregon, just about 2 hours south of Portland, and we like to say that one of our goals is bringing biodiversity back to agriculture, and we do this by promoting sort of less common crops and less common varieties. So we really try hard to have offerings in our collection that are not available elsewhere, and we strongly believe that this adds to the resilience of the food system.
So big goals and wonderful things, unusual things, each with a special story behind it about where you found it and who shared it with you, and so for sort of a provenance, which I love. Reading the descriptions in your catalog are very unusual often. When I looked at the catalog recently, you know, I was really taken by a photo of, you know, I looked at this photo of a seed head of, I think it was a foxtail millet, maybe called Hell's Canyon. Is that a name, or did I make that up?
That is one of the varieties we offer.
Yeah, and I paged through then. From there, I kind of clicked through. I thought, oh, it's in the grains category of things and grain-like offerings. And I thought, why aren't I growing more of these? They're sort of like really bold-looking ornamentals, but they also have this sort of food value. So what drew you, or you and Andrew, into growing them and collecting them?
Well, I think garden production of staple food crops is something that's possible. If we look worldwide, you know, the things that Westerners think of as staple food crops are corn and wheat and just traditional grains. But worldwide, there are actually quite a few other things that people have depended upon for centuries. And in the face of a changing climate, I think a lot of these other types of grains are going to become more important. Mm-hmm. And millet is really an excellent example of a crop that can grow really quickly with minimal water. It is a little bit of a challenge to eat it because it is wrapped with a hull, but there are ways that traditional cultures have gotten around that. And I think, you know, depending on how creative you want to be, there's really a lot of possibilities out there with these other sorts of grains.
So it really speaks to your what you said about your mission, resilient crops and diversity and so forth as well. So grain, you know, when I wrote to you and I said, ooh, I want to do the thing about grains, I loved looking at them in your catalog, and you emailed back and you said also the pseudo grains. You sort of not corrected me, but you know what I mean, made it more specific. And so let's just talk about what's a grain and what's not a grain? What's a cereal and what's a pseudo-cereal? Is that the sort of how we break them down, I guess? So I guess botanically, what the grains are in the Poaceae, is that how I say it?
Wheat. Yeah, I've been informed that any Latin name, you just say it, that's the right way.
It was not a spoken language. It was a written language among scientists, right? Yeah, exactly.
You're exactly right. So grains are traditionally the cereal grasses, so they're monocots generally. So
yes.
When they germinate, they just send up one leaf. So wheat and rye and all of those sorts of more traditional grains, as well as corn and sorghum, rice and teff. Those are all within the grass family, so they're grains. The pseudo cereal grains are dicots, and those are the ones that I recommend more for the home garden or homestead garden scale. So that's amaranth and quinoa, and then as well as there's the oilseed grains, which include sunflowers and poppy seed, camelina, and flax. Of these like high protein, high calorie crops.
Okay, and so like buckwheat is a pseudo cereal grain, right? Like that's not a real grain either. That's another one, and sometimes that's used for other things like cover cropping, for instance. But it's not really a grain, but it's sort of lumped in there. And is millet a true grass? I think millet may be an actual grass. It's a true grain.
It is.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So that's good. When I looked at the catalog, of course, as usual, Margaret wanted them all. So rather than that, maybe we could talk about, and by the way, you also, I noticed, sell some of the true grains like barley and wheat and so forth, presumably to other farmers or larger scale operations. But where would we start? Well, you said that the pseudo ones are probably more appropriate for home gardeners. Are there ones that you started with and sort of learned on or that are easier? How shall we begin?
My favorite to start with is amaranth.
Yeah.
I think it's probably the most accessible. It's the most beautiful. And so as far as serving the dual purpose of the, some would say, edimental crops.
Edimental? Is that, did you just make that up?
I did not make that up. I wish I did. But, it's edible as well as ornamental. Amaranth, like quinoa and a couple of the others, you can eat the leaves as well as the grains once you harvest it. The amaranth comes in just a wide array of colors and flowering types, and many of the flowering types have a grain that is suitable to then harvest and process for food. Not all amaranths are like this. There's a white-seeded type and a black-seeded type, and the black-seeded types are less good for eating as a crop. But, they're quick to mature. They're easy to thresh. They're relatively high-yielding.
And they're gorgeous. I mean, so people may know the, quote, ornamental love lies bleeding, right? The one with sort of purplish, winish-colored tassels or whatever we want, I don't want to call them, but in your catalog you have a coral one and a copper one and a sort of reddish gold one and one that's marbled in color, like I think it's called San Lorenzo, is that right?
Yeah.
And so you said they're fast, but they get quite big, don't they?
They do, and a lot of that depends on how they're grown. So for our own production, we think fewer plants, larger plants, easier to care for, less processing in the end. So we like to grow these things at about like 1 foot spacing in row, and then our rows are 2 feet apart. So they can get up to 6 feet tall and just be almost as large as a Christmas tree, or if in some places people would just like direct sow them a few inches apart, and then you have, a lot of much smaller plants. So there's a wide variation of what these plants can do given the resources.
Do I sow them indoors first and get a head start, or are you direct sowing? What do you recommend for a gardener, getting started with these?
Well, we really strongly prefer to sow indoors, and we do that in around mid-April, and our goal is to plant them out around mid-May. And that gives us a chance to get a head start on weeds. We really like transplanting around here because our weed seed bank is fairly large.
Yeah.
And as you may know, amaranth is a common garden weed. It's a different species, the garden weed, also known as pigweed.
Yes.
So it can be hard to tell them apart when they're very young.
Oh, dear.
And the same goes with quinoa. It looks a lot like wild lamb's quarters. So okay. By transplanting, we know where the plants are.
Okay.
They're significantly larger.
So you're giving them about a month indoors, I think you were saying, but the seedlings. And you said mid-May set out. Now, when's your frost date? Just so I'm sort of in tune with that. You know, mine is more like the third week of May. When's your frost date?
Officially, it's mid-May.
Okay. So you're around the frost date, but are these tender? Frost tender, or can they take a little cool weather? Do you think the babies?
I think that they're frost tender. Mm-hmm. That's a great question.
No, but so you're putting it right around the frost date so that you're basically safe-ish.
Right. Yeah, I mean, these are plants that love warm weather and warm soil, and so I don't think that you would really gain much if you planted them.
Yeah, so that's the kind of schedule of like a tomato for me. I do the same kind of a thing, although I might give that 6 weeks or so inside, or maybe these as well. I don't know. But okay, so that's good. And like you said, the spacing allows the plants to reach full stature. So if I, for instance, wanted to use them for drama, I mean, they would be great maybe with like sunflowers or other statuesque things, right, of some height. If I was using them in the ornamental sense.
Right, absolutely. Yeah. And amaranth has the added bonus of it's not only an excellent cut flower, but also performs really well as an everlasting or dried flower if you harvest it at the right moment.
So maybe we shouldn't say dual purpose. Maybe we should say triple purpose, right?
Right. Or quadruple if you think about eating the leaves as well.
Oh, my goodness.
It's all things to all people.
Oh, my goodness. So we're starting with amaranths, and we'll take a look at some of those. And as I said, the color range, that's what kind of got me excited, because the Love Lies Bleeding-ish color doesn't really work for me. But some of those even warmer colors that you had, kind of corally and coppery, those I think would, and that was what kind of caught my eye. So what about what would be sort of the next one that you would want us to give a look to?
Well, I think from the perspective of maybe someone who's really more into the ornamental aspect, mm-hmm. I think probably the more oil seed grains, the flowering ones, right? So sunflowers yield a great seed that's edible. Poppies, so we offer two varieties, the traditional like bread seed poppy, that's the blue-purple one, and then as well as we have a white-seeded one that's also really quite delicious, a nice nutty flavor. And then flax and camelina. Camelina is a brassica relative. It's a yellow-flowered oil seed. Things that are just both beautiful feed the pollinators as well as can provide a little supplemental staple food for the gardener as well.
Yeah. I guess I forgot to say, I mentioned in the beginning about like birds. Do you see, is one of the things about like growing the amaranth that you have to, do the birds go after it if it's ripening up in the field, or it's not a problem? I wasn't sure. I've never grown it.
We have a little bit of bird depredation mm-hmm. on our amaranth, mm-hmm. but we like to plant it next to other crops that birds prefer, and that's always, as a seed production farm, we're always kind of trying to balance that. And we have the American goldfinch here.
Yes.
We have a lot of sparrows and finches. And so they really love millet.
That's what I would think, that they'd be crazy for millet, which, of course, the proso, I think, millets, which aren't the ones with the big foxtail-like heads, right? That's in birds, in the sort of lower end bird seed mixes, I think, is what's in it.
Right. Yeah. Mm. And you know, they'll go for any millet that they, okay, that they can get. So, but right, there are the sprays that are sold as bird food. If you've ever,
yes,
had a parakeet or
yes,
whatever.
I have seen those. Yeah.
People are, I think, most familiar with millet as a bird food.
Yeah. Are any of the quinoas particularly showy, or is that not sort of, is that more for eating?
There are a few varieties of quinoa that are more diverse in colors. I think they're quite beautiful, but not in a cut flower sort of way. Although I have heard of some seed companies promoting quinoa, mm-hmm, as a cut flower. So maybe that's a beauty is in the eye of the beholder sort of.
Uh-huh. And with those, well, maybe I'll first ask about the sorghums, because those are, that can be big too, yes? Like statuesque, can the sorghum be big?
Oh, yeah. Usually they're quite tall. We have one that was like 13 feet tall this year, and the frost was coming, and we were trying to wrestle some fabric over the top of it, and it didn't quite work out. Yeah, sorghum is another really, really great crop. It does get quite tall. It's taller than most varieties of corn most of the time. And the grain types yield about a half a pound per head. And
wow.
So just as far as yield for our kitchen goes, it's quite high yielding. And also, you know, sorghum grain can be popped kind of like popcorn. It can be milled. It can be cooked up like a porridge. It's pretty accessible in the kitchen.
Yeah, so. I was interested to read in the catalog and some of the descriptions how many things you personally do use, make flour from, bake with, et cetera. So you really, and again, people can come at these as beautiful, but they can, as ornamental, but they're certainly, as you say, staples around the world in different cultures, some of these grains and pseudograins. And so you just gave us some examples with the sorghum. With the amaranth, do you do similar things with that?
Amaranth, I really like to add to breads. I make bread every week. So uh-huh. A lot of these grains I'll just throw a little bit in to my weekly loaf of bread. But amaranth, actually, it cooks up pretty similarly to quinoa or rice. And it's actually higher in protein than quinoa. 9 grams per cup, so it's pretty great in that way. And then, you know, once it's cooked, can be just eaten plain as if it were rice, or integrated into other things. Like we added some to some like squash fritters recently.
Oh.
That was pretty good.
Huh. Now with the with the millets, with the amaranth, with you mentioned the amaranth already, how to grow it, but the sorghum, the millets, quinoa, are you also transplanting? You're starting them indoors, or what? Any special things to know if we're going to give, you know, buy a pack of seed and get started with them as gardeners?
Yeah, the quinoa and the sorghum, we plant just exactly like that amaranth.
Okay.
So we're sowing mid-April, planting out mid-May.
Okay.
Some of them, like the sorghum, would probably be fine if it were direct seeded, but in addition to the weed problem, there's also, we have a lot of little critters that we share our farm with that are very interested in large seeded sprouting crops.
That's never happened to me with peas or beans or corn or anything, Sarah, or pumpkins or cucumbers, never.
Right.
How is it that they know the minute that we've sown a whole row of some large seeded crop? How is it that they know? Do they watch us?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I'm pretty sure they're watching at all times.
Oh, my goodness.
But things like the flax and poppies are way better if they're direct sown. And
Right. Yeah. I agree. I mean, the poppies... The best way to get poppies is to let them is to have even one survive and do its own thing and let it tell you where it wants to grow, you know? I mean,
right.
Yeah, self-sowers are great. And I also dug into the beautiful range of corn offerings on the website in terms of colors, and that's a true grain. And you know, rather than talk about those too much, except to say you need a little more space for those, right? You need to sort of do a block of it, I think, to have success.
Right. So for pollination, it's recommended that you have a pretty good block of it, but it's not absolutely necessary. I mean, probably at least 20 plants would get you good pollination. Corns are really great. I mean, popcorn is so accessible. You know, just grow it, shell it, pop it, and it's easy to clean. It's easy to work with.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a great entry point for corn as a grain in the home garden.
Yeah. So in our last, you know, 2-3 minutes, I just wanted to say, and again, I know you don't sell like cover crop seed and generally speaking on the website, but your organic farmers, and so soil is your key resource. And cover cropping is such an important part of any, you know, organic soil management practice. So I'm assuming you use various things, including perhaps some grains and some who knows what, legumes, I don't know. Anything about, you know, just sort of the pitch for cover cropping, because it's something, you know, I always grew up learning about it, is called green manuring, you know, sort of hippie term, you know, that it's so important, and yet so few home gardeners, I think, really do it. But how about you guys?
Oh, yeah, cover cropping is really integral to our system. Mm-hmm. And you're right, we use sometimes for summer cover cropping, we use a sorghum Sudan grass hybrid or buckwheat, and these are integrated back into the soil and have a lot of benefits. The buckwheat, when it's flowering, is just really great for pollinators as well.
It's amazing, yeah.
Suppressing weeds and kind of holding on to the nitrogen so it doesn't run off. In the wintertime, we usually plant a mixture of rye or triticale. And actually, our first grain crop that we ever harvested was just a rye cover crop that we decided to let go. And, you know, they also, if you do plant cover crops and don't cut them down in time, they function good as bird food, as I've seen farmers cut them for bouquets of grain bundles.
Yeah.
It's
a lot of possibilities, both with the grains, the pseudo grains, and with a good cover cropping program. So Sarah Kleeker of Adaptive Seeds, I'm glad to speak to you. And as I said, I had a good time with the catalog. It got me thinking of some new ideas for some certain places in the garden. So maybe I'll send you some snapshots later on.
Oh, that'd be so great. Well, it's been a pleasure, Margaret.
Yeah.
Thanks again for having me on.
All right. Best to both of you. Talk to you soon.
Okay. Bye.
Underwriting support from Timber Press, your go-to resource for books in gardening and nature. Whether you're a new gardener, a professional at the top of your field, or a reader interested in the wonders of the natural world, their books are there to help you grow. TimberPress.com.
And talk to all of the rest of you again soon, I hope, too. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version on Stitcher or iTunes. And you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com or on Facebook and Instagram as @awaytogarden. And happy seed shopping meantime.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.